Caverly. Elizabeth Cuthbert Caverly and I have been bringing you the latest breaking news you'll never hear in the lying mainstream media. For 15 years, we've been bringing you the Divided Kingdom, a Watchman warning program to alert Christians, particularly the growing hidden attacks by Luciferian forces on their spiritual well-being and their very physical lives. You can hear us on WWCR, Worldwide Christian Radio, on shortwave, 4.840 megahertz, Thursday evenings at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Also, Saturday mornings on 7.890 megahertz at 8 a.m. Eastern. You can also hear us on the Liberty Works Radio Network, LWRN.net, Mondays at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, repeating at 11 p.m. Encourage your young friends to find apps there to hear a variety of long-established Patriot broadcasters. Go to LWRN.net. The tug of war, which is what we entitled this program, is intensifying in late December 2018. Which will it be, life guided by Jesus Christ or death, handily provided by Satan and his dark minions? As we go back and forth tonight, reporting on the light and the dark that are at deep state war with each other, you'll be able to plainly see the battle is ever more engaged, drawing ever nearer to your door. The time when even the most selfish, most apathetic, most brainwashed will have to awaken and run for their very lives, physical and spiritual. The headlines of our key breaking news say it all. December 12th, Wednesday, Strasbourg shooting suspect IDs as extremist. Still at large, five others arrested. Fox News by Bradford Betts and Ryan Gatos. A suspect who opened fire at a Christmas market in eastern France, leaving three dead and 11 others wounded, and fled the scene, was identified as 29-year-old Sharif Chekhet, police said Wednesday. A wide-scale manhunt was underway near Strasbourg as the French government raised the security level and sent police reinforcements to the city, located about 305 miles east of Paris. Chekhet was wounded in a gunfight with soldiers after the Tuesday night attack and escaped, police officials said. A top French official said he might have fled to neighboring Germany. A photo of what appears to be Chekhet was released on social media Wednesday. Dominique Martin, a member of European Parliament, tweeted the photo. Police sought to arrest the man Tuesday morning, hours before the shooting, in relation to an attempted murder, senior Interior Ministry official Lorenz Nunez told France Inter Radio. However, he wasn't at home, but authorities managed to detain five others. Nunez said Chekhet had been radicalized in prison and had been monitored by French intelligence services since his release from prison in 2015 because of his suspected religious extremism. He was the subject of a fiche S, an indicator used by French law enforcement to signal potential national security threats, according to the BBC. It's the same tag Amedi Koulibaly had received before he attacked a kosher supermarket in 2015. Chekhet is said to have a long rap sheet in France, including crimes for robbery. He was also convicted of robbery in Germany in 2016 and sentenced to 2 years and 3 months in prison for breaking into a dental practice and pharmacy in two German towns. He was also sentenced to prison in France in 2008 and in Basel, Switzerland in 2013 for other robberies, according to a 2016 verdict obtained by the Associated Press. He was reportedly deported to France in 2016. Witnesses described screams around the Strasbourg market during the attack. Strasbourg, which is home to the European Parliament, bills itself as the, quote, capital of Christmas, unquote, said Yuan Bazard, 27, talking to the Associated Press, quote, I heard two or three shots at around 7:55 p.m., then I heard screams. I got close to the window. I saw people running. After that, I closed the shutters. Then I heard more shots, closer this time. I thought, maybe it's firecrackers. And then as it got close, it really was shocking. There were a lot of screams. There were police or soldiers shouting, "Get inside and put your hands on your head." The motive for the attack wasn't immediately known. No one claimed responsibility for the attack, but the U.S.-based site intelligence group said Islamic State supporters were celebrating, according to Reuters. Islamic terrorists have a history of plotting assaults at Christmas markets, including one disrupted plot in which nearly a dozen militants sought to bomb the Strasbourg market around the millennium. More recently, on December 19, 2016, an ISIS-inspired attacker rammed his truck into a crowd of people at a Christmas market in Berlin, killing 12 and injuring 56 others.
Yes, Lou, this is Elizabeth Cuppett-Caverly. We can see that the tug of war, one aspect of it that is very important, is between radical Islam and Christianity. Radical Islam would like to destroy Christianity, hence the attacks on the Christmas markets. Le Monde weighed in on December 12th. Strasbourg, what is known about the attack? The attack, Tuesday night near the Christmas market, killed 3 and injured 12, according to a provisional report. The government has announced the passage of the Vigipirate plan at the emergency bombing level. And this was from Le Monde with AFP and Reuters. A man opened fire on the evening of Tuesday, December 11th, at the edge of the Strasbourg Christmas market, killing 3 people, one of them is brain dead, and wounding 12 others. A balance sheet, still provisional, the prefecture having changed version several times to finally confirm the figures given by the Ministry of the Interior in the morning. The assailant, identified by the authorities, is still on the run and actively sought after. The Paris Prosecutor's Office opened an investigation into, quote, assassination attempts in connection with a terrorist enterprise, end of quote, and, quote, criminal terrorist criminal conspiracy, end of quote. The public prosecutor of Paris, Remy Heitz, gave details on the facts at a press conference Wednesday noon. Terrorism has again struck our territory in Strasbourg, dramatically reminding us that the threat is still there, he said in the preamble, confirming the terrorist motivation of the attack in the center in the early evening Tuesday. The suspect was seen carrying a weapon before 8 p.m. at the Rue des Orfèvres, detailed the prosecutor. He then moved to this neighborhood. Throughout his career, he opened fire with a handgun and a knife, added Heitz. A local resident witnessed a scene in Le Monde as he was preparing to close his metal shutters to go for a beer in his neighborhood around 8 p.m. Philippe Radius, 52, heard gunshots. Leaning out the window, he saw in St. Helens Street, where he lives, an armed man who came running from the Rue du Saumon alone. He went up the street, and while jogging, he recharged his revolver 3 times. It gave an impression of great coolness, notes the former bookseller. During the shooting, other witnesses heard him shout, "Allahu Akbar." Then, facing 4 soldiers of the Sentinel Force, he fired in their direction, continued the prosecutor, and was wounded in the arm as a result of exchanges of gunfire. The suspect then took a taxi and went to the district of Neudorf, quote, without giving a precise address, end of quote, to the driver, stating that he would guide him. During the trip, the suspect justified his injury by saying that he had, quote, shot at soldiers and, quote, killed several people. On his way out of the taxi, he passed police officers and a 3rd exchange of fire took place. The taxi driver then went to the police station to report that he had taken charge of an armed and injured man. By his side, the suspect allegedly referred to a grenade at his home. However, that very morning, a search had taken place at his home, during which several weapons, including a grenade, had been discovered. It is the mention of, quote, a grenade at his house that morning, end of quote, that would have allowed the investigators to go back to the profile of the current suspect who is on the run. According to the Minister of the Interior, 3 people, citizens, tried to challenge the attacker during his, quote, journey. One of them was stabbed, said Christophe Castanet. It's also citizenship. the ability of some men and women to be heroic in exceptional moments. According to Christophe Castaner, the fugitive on the run was identified last night. Now, this is under the heading, What Do We Know About the Suspect? Born in 1989 in Strasbourg, Sherif C. is 29 years old. Known as Common Law Police Services, it is the subject of an S-Card, abbreviation for State Security, and was followed by the Directorate General of Internal Security, DGSI. Quote, his criminal record includes 27 convictions for offenses committed in France, Germany, and Switzerland, said the public prosecutor of Paris. Four of the relatives in question were placed in custody tonight, said Mr. Heitz, adding that many searches were performed that night in the places he may have frequented. And the profile says, still on the run, the Strasbourg shooter is a radicalized, in quotes, with a long judicial history. Faced with the possibility of a leak of the suspect to Germany, the authorities have strengthened their controls along the Rhine, said the spokesman of the judicial police, and they are on the alert elsewhere in the country. What balance? Three people died, one of whom is brain dead. 12 people were injured, two of whom are still in a state of absolute emergency and are between life and death. One of these people is of Italian nationality, said the health minister, Agnes Buzyn, during a press conference at the CHU Haute-Pierre in Strasbourg. A Thai tourist is among the dead, said the mayor of the city, Roland Rhee. Two lighter wounded left the hospital this morning, he added. Investigation and tracking, and again, this is from Le Monde on December 12, 2018. The Paris prosecutor's office opened an investigation into assassination attempts in connection with a terrorist enterprise and criminal conspiracy. And the investigations were entrusted to the SDAT, the Anti-Terrorism Subdirectorate, the Interregional Directorate of the Judicial Police, that's the DIPJ of Strasbourg, and the DGSI. The Paris prosecutor goes to the scene. In addition, Christophe Castaner said that 720 people are mobilized on the ground, including two helicopters, but also soldiers of Operation Sentinel to challenge the suspect. The containment lifted. Quote, the people in Strasbourg, especially in the area of Neudorf and the Place de l'Étoile, must remain confined, asked the prefecture after the shooting. A regrouping point for the victims has been installed on Place Kléber. Around 1:30 a.m. on Wednesday, people confined to restaurants and downtown buildings began to evacuate. The containment has been lifted, Castaner said. Psychological cells have been put in place. The Interior Minister said that schools, primary schools, colleges, and high schools would open Wednesday. As for the prefect of the department, he signed an order prohibiting until further notice any static gathering and any event, procession, or gathering in the territory of the municipality of Strasbourg. Now, the context here that Le Monde concludes with is the Christmas market in Strasbourg was the subject of a draft bombing in December 2000. It is permanently protected by a major surveillance device. The shooting comes as France lives under a high terrorist threat since the wave of unprecedented jihadist attacks that have killed 246 people since 2015. Now, listeners, our program tonight is entitled Tug of War. And there is a reaction for every action. And there is something hidden behind every surface event. We remember how Rahm Emanuel said that we never could let a good crisis go to waste. And I believe this is true of the radical Islamic groups who would like to keep using Dawah. And this is that deception that Carol Matriciano, the late great documentary producer, had in Islam Rising. These people pretend to assimilate. They get into positions of authority. We have organizations like CARE in the United States. And now I believe we have two women Muslims in Congress. Aren't we smart? Aren't we proud of our intelligence? We're like lemmings going down to the edge of a cliff. And now Lou, we're going to see the Rahm Emanuel phenomenon. What use will the radical jihadists make out of all of this?
Iran, French riots signal, quote, Islamic awakening, unquote, posted by Art Moore, December 11, 2018. The protests and riots in France are part of an Islamic awakening foreseen by Iran's supreme leader, the Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, declared the head of the Islamic Republic judiciary. The judiciary chief, Ayatollah Saded Amoli Larijani, noted Khamenei's had predicted years ago that an Islamic awakening would go beyond Muslim countries and reach Europe, the Iranian Mizan news agency said, according to Radio Fodder. Larijani did not explain how the protests are related to Islam, but working-class young people among France's Muslim minority have engaged in numerous violent protests over the past decade. And in Egypt, media affiliated with the regime of Egyptian President Abdel al-Fattah al-Sisi are claiming the Muslim Brotherhood is involved in the French protests. Reports in Egyptian newspapers and on television assert covert Muslim Brotherhood activists have infiltrated the ranks of the French protesters, fanning violence, looting, and vandalism across the country, according to the Middle East Media Research Institute.
And Lou, do we see how the leftists are all part of this? This amalgam of radical leftists, Antifa, and plus the radical Democrats. We all remember the Arab Spring, and we remember this Clintonian support that the State Department gave Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton, who has not been indicted. Hillary Clinton, who still thinks she can get away with these emails that she destroyed forever. But we do have God Almighty watching over all of these situations. But we can see that we must awaken the American Christians who are allowing these mosques to be built in their neighborhood, who are believing that these people want to assimilate, who don't seem to recognize all the rapes and the assaults that were done in Germany and in Sweden. Pick up this article more, Lou.
The Egyptian media is comparing the Brotherhoods, that's the Muslim Brotherhoods, alleged participation in French protests to its part in the 2011 protests in Egypt that ultimately brought down the regime of President Hosni Mubarak. The Brotherhood has denied all involvement in the French protests, accusing the Egyptian regime of trying to damage its reputation and inciting the West against it. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman told reporters on December 3rd that France should, quote, show restraint, unquote, in dealing with protesters. France later responded that Iran should not interfere in its internal affairs. On Sunday, former Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad also tweeted that France should listen to the protesters. Quote, isn't the main goal of a government to satisfy the demands of citizens? Ahmadinejad asked. Then he went on to say, quote, these protesters are the same citizens. Listen to their demands and fulfill them in the best way possible.
No wonder you couldn't remember Ahmadinejad. That's from the Bush years. The more things change, the more they stay the same. Time magazine's memorial to George Herbert Walker Bush, of course, showed an article in which a woman journalist was so surprised in the year 2005 to find George Herbert Walker Bush sitting there with former President Clinton, and they were buddy-buddy, and one of them touched the other one on the shoulder, and they went on to do all this Haiti relief work together. My word, do we not know anything about some of the books that have come out? What about the Bush crime family written by Roger Stone? As InfoWars fights for its life, some of you might want to go to the InfoWars store, and you might want to try to help Alex Jones stay in a position that he can let us know about some of these hidden things. And, of course, I did not watch one scintilla of all of the funeral ceremonies. Not one sentence did I hear. I kept telling him, turn it off, turn it off, turn it off. I knew enough about Nancy Reagan's attitude. I do not believe, if I'm correct, that she permitted the Bushes to be at Ronald Reagan's funeral. She always blamed the Bushes for having some part in the assassination attempt on her husband. And we've heard several stories. Of course, one story, I believe, came out of Phyllis Schlafly's group, the Eagle Forum. There were people there who were in those dark-filled rooms, and they maintained that Reagan's choice was not Bush. But he was told by the deep state, if you don't pick Bush, you don't become president. So what was he to do? And then, of course, we know about that dinner meeting between the Hinckley family and the Bush family the night before the assassination on Ronald Reagan. Wasn't that a quaint coincidence, Lou?
Oh, that was just a coincidence. Never mind the mathematics of it, would be one chance in a million.
And we also heard a recent rumor. It was alleged that from that day of the assassination attempt, and you remember how God miraculously stepped into American history again, that I believe had that bullet just been about an inch or a quarter of an inch to a different direction, it would have stopped Reagan's heart. But God was merciful, and we have heard the allegation that from that time on, Reagan did carry a gun, and that Bush never knew it. So when we say there are a lot of things going on, there really are. And if you appreciate a program like this that tells you the truth from a Christian viewpoint, you can write to us. And if you want to send a little cash, we cannot take checks to us personally, but you could write them out to WWCR, and you could write to Lou, capital L-O-U, Caverly, capital C-A-V-E-R-L-Y, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And again, the P.O. Box is 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. We really want to thank a few of you who have recently written to us and encouraged us. And because January is our harder month, we have five Thursdays in that month, one of you sent us $220 help. You cannot know how that will be a blessing to us. We appreciate all of your letters. Since we've both been ill with almost a pneumonia, I believe, again, I have not been able to correspond with all of you yet, but I will. And it's so important that we have this fellowship together in which we can pray, because some of you do remember, if you heard all of our program about a week ago, we did a repeat, and we heard the depravity on television in 2014, and it was still just so significant when we hear now about the transgenders marching in the Victoria's Secret parade on TV. That's just one little example of how things are changing. We have a letter from a listener this week about the bathroom issue is still back in Pennsylvania, the children being forced to go in. And she said, how did you feel in high school when you had to bury yourself and take a shower during gym? And now, if you were a young girl and there you are standing looking at another so-called girl who has other sex organs, how in the world would you feel? You know, we're really in a maelstrom of spiritual depravity, cultural depravity. But during that program, we told you one of the most important stories we can ever tell you. And in case you missed it, we must recap it at least a little bit here right now. And it was the story told by Catherine Marshall. Catherine Marshall was the widow of Peter Marshall, who had been the Senate chaplain in the 40s. And she had gone through quite a lot in her life. She was a survivor of tuberculosis, for one thing. She had lain at bed rest for over 2 years. And I always felt that one thing she wrote in one of her books was helpful to me personally. It was called The Prayer of Relinquishment. And I read this book at a time when I had a lot of health problems. I did not know yet about a lupus diagnosis. I knew I had a lot of terrible food allergies. And I was just wishing that I could find someone who could run certain tests that were a little unorthodox. It was doing some blood work and then assessing your food allergies. And I read about this, and it was being done in Texas. And I thought, here I am in Maryland. I'll never be able to get there, but I wish that I could have those tests. And then I read Catherine Marshall's book and read about the prayer of relinquishment was simply this, that you thanked God for what he had already done for you, period. You didn't keep stressing him out, will you do this, will you do that? You thanked him greatly for what he had done. So I did that. And do you know, within a day or two, I went to the Marriott Hot Shops. It was a cafeteria that had wonderful food in those days. And as I was in line, people were still allowed to smoke. And this guy lit up, and I started coughing, and I commented about it to the couple ahead of me, Mr. and Mrs. Valores. And they were then a middle-aged couple, very nice-looking couple. And somehow we seemed to feel some camaraderie together, so we decided to sit and eat together. And lo and behold, in the talk, I found out that Mr. Valores had to be taken to the bathroom 13 times a day, and he was almost dying. And he found a doctor in Baltimore. And guess what? That doctor ran these tests that I had read about in Texas. There, God provided this. This doctor was rather eccentric and wasn't really happy with me my first visit there because I had low blood sugar and I had to drive about 2 hours to get to Baltimore. And then she made me wait till almost 4 p.m. So you can imagine, I was almost a basket case from no food, no sugar. And so I said a little smart remark to her, and of course that set the tone. But she was very helpful. These tests were something like they put some food extract right with the drop of your blood, and she could see what percentage of your blood was destroyed, your blood cells, by the food. And to this day, some of the things that she said were my worst offenders, I try not to eat them regularly, and it is helpful. And of course, the government being the government, a few years later, she was not permitted to run those tests. They had to run less efficient tests. We know how the system works. In fact, I think I just heard today that there was a fatality. A young person, and I'm not sure in what locality exactly it was. It may have been Pennsylvania. It was an 18-year-old who died because she was taking a medication for Crohn's disease, and it allowed this terrible adenovirus to hit her. It made her more susceptible. Yes, try to stay drug-free if you can. But at any rate, what we're saying here is God Almighty is watching over. So now, getting back to Catherine Marshall, after Peter Marshall died, she eventually remarried Leonard Lessord, and he was a guidepost editor. And so she had heard about this story about Betty Maltz. And so Betty Maltz eventually was able to come and visit with Catherine Marshall, and we got the story, which we went into in depth, and it would have been a week before this week. I guess it would have been December 6th, 2018, and I'm not sure whether we have that in our archives yet. Do we have that one in our archives, Lou? Not quite yet, but in about a week or two, you could go back and see it. To make it the story shorter, Betty got very sick and went to the hospital, and they weren't quite sure what it was, and there was some involvement before they found it had been a ruptured appendix. But this appendix, I think, had been rupturing over and over, and she was filled with gangrene in all of her major organs. And the gist of it was she probably wouldn't live more than a few hours. She did live, and she was in a coma, and she remarked upon another thing that we need to bring out to all of you. This is the season of God's love and forgiveness of our sins shown by his sending Jesus to earth, his only beloved son, to die a horrible death on the cross in place of our sins. And so there was a man that Betty had not liked. She was rather snobby, she said, before all this happened to her. And for whatever reason, she looked down on this man. And during her coma, who came in near her bed and read scripture to her? That man. And she, in the coma, felt a new love for him and a new understanding. Well, time passed, and we came to the point that she said that you must realize many times that when people are in comas, they can hear you. They can sense whether you're positive or not, too, whether you think they're going to get well. She ended up looking into the gates of heaven and hearing the beautiful singing. And some of what she heard makes us think about what Al Cuppett says, remove not the old landmarks. And I believe that's in Proverbs. Like, don't take away the old hymns, because what she heard, there was something about one of these old hymns about my account was settled long ago. You see, no matter what sin we've committed, if there are any globalists listening who have any desire to see heaven, we hope that George Herbert Walker Bush had repented. We don't know. Only God knows. But if there are any listening, I would urge them to give their lives to Jesus, just to pray, ask him to forgive their sins, and believe in Jesus. And so what happened when Betty heard these songs, the angel said to her, do you want to go on in and join them? And she said, no, I'd like to sing here a little bit, but then I'd like to return to my family. Now, what was happening on earth at that time, there was a phone call to Betty's parents, and her father had already gotten up early. I believe that he was impressed with the need to go to the hospital, so he had just left, and the mother answered the phone and was told, your daughter Betty just expired a few minutes ago. And the mother said, oh my, can you reach my husband before he sees this? It'll be so crushing to him. And so that ended that conversation. And when Betty Maltz's father got to the hospital, for some reason, he went in the nurse's entrance. So you see, no one could warn him. And when he got to the room, the sheet was pulled up over Betty. Now, the sun began to stream in, and as Betty tells it, she began to feel everything was moving, and she saw letters coming in the windows with the sunlight. Now, Lou, do you remember the exact passage in John? But it is what? I am the way, the truth, and the life. I believe that is the passage, isn't it? And she actually saw this spelled out. And she felt the life returning into her body, into her fingertips. And she sat up and saw her father. Now, that wasn't the end of this great, great, immense miracle. By mistake, a nurse later brought in food. And of course, then they were telling this nurse, you have to go in and pump out her stomach. She could never eat this food. And it was a pork chop and some pudding and some other things. And Betty said, please don't do that. I feel well. I had my food. I enjoyed it. Now, we cannot imagine such a miracle happening with Allah or with Buddha, the dead gods. Can we, Lou?
Not at all, no. I don't think the Quran makes any such claims about Muhammad, and I'm sure that Buddha is not credited with any kind of miracles of the type that Jesus Christ performed.
So please lose your fear out there and start standing up, because this is a pivotal time. And now, to just recap more briefly than we had intended about the yellow vests, you've heard so much about this that Macron now has caved in a little bit. He is telling the people on December 11th that he wants to offer a year-end tax-free bonus to the people. But you see, these crumbs, the people aren't going to accept all this. But Monday, December 10th, we would see what was going on. Fox News was saying in a pre-taped address broadcast on television, Macron criticized the inadmissible violence of the protests and promised to use all means to restore calm. When violence is unleashed, freedom stops. But, you know, listeners, we heard on InfoWars from the InfoWars Europe correspondent who had actually been there and witnessed these masked men in the tanks, the EU tanks, the police force that came in. This is the tyranny. They want to get all the open borders reinstated. They want to keep destroying Europe. But what's the result again? We're saying tug of war tonight. The pushback, you see, is these protests, these people. The radicalizing protest movement was initially triggered by a proposed fuel tax hike and other economic policies amid high living costs in France and the feeling that Macron is favoring the rich. But as the demonstrations continued, its participants have become more of an amorphous group with disparate demands. And actually, this is the rise of populism. We know that President Trump has tweeted and commented that, you know, in favor of populism. It's really rising around the world. And I believe that Monday, December 10th, again, was headline, Macron surrenders to yellow vests in blow to climate movement. The government did not listen, and this was the Washington Times, Rebecca Rosman. A chastened French president, Emmanuel Macron, surrendered Monday to the demands of protesters who have shut down much of the country over the past month, offering wage hikes and tax cuts starting next year, while signaling a retreat from his greater plan to overhaul France's heavily regulated economy and generous social welfare program. In looking at this, his retreat, this article says, also was widely seen as yet another political blow to the cause of climate change. Mr. Macron originally conceived of the fuel tax hike as one way to lower France's reliance on fossil fuels. But even after abandoning that proposal last week, the government was not able to quell the unrest. President Trump weighed in several times by Twitter over the weekend, blaming the French unrest on reaction to the costs of climate change policies and a Paris climate accord that Mr. Macron has championed. Mr. Trump's tweets drew a rebuke Sunday from French Foreign Minister Jean-Yves Le Drian, who accused the U.S. president of meddling in France's internal affairs. And there were some other populist leaders who were, you know, sounding off, I think, in France. And because there were other things involved, his pro-business policies, that's Macron, have made it easier for employers to hire and fire workers and cut taxes on corporations. But they have yet to restrain living costs or spark significant job growth for ordinary people. Specifically, many of the protesters want higher salaries and pensions, jobs, better services, and tax cuts. Some of the other people, I think, weighing in included Marine Le Pen and some others. I don't know whether we have a little bit here on that, but we can get the picture here that this is the tug of war. And now when we're bringing up the climate change, we said we had another breaking article. And this applies to all of us here as we watch decade after decade the chemtrails spraying the chemicals, including the harmful aluminum and barium that are so linked to Alzheimer's and dementia. And we told you before that we were watching an old video of, what's his name, Robert? Can you remember? Tender Mercy. Robert Duvall. Robert Duvall, and I don't remember who the female lead was, but it was a good story of redemption, a person who kind of was drifting and was, redeemed. Tender Mercies, but that movie was made in the 1980s, and we saw chemtrails in it. So we were shocked. We were horrified. How long is this plan that's written there on the Georgia Guidestones in Elberton, Georgia, one of the New Age goals or the New World Order goals is to keep the population of Earth in balance at 500 million. So now we have a bombshell article for you.
An amazing science lesson from Mike Adams at naturalnews.com, dated December 7th, 2018, by Mike Adams. If you'll bear with me for just a moment, here we are. We were all taught how photosynthesis works in high school. Or at least you should have been taught how it works. Photosynthesis is arguably the single most important metabolic process on the planet. And it is from this process that nearly all complex life is sustained. Photosynthesis is a process by which plants produce metabolic energy. Using this energy combined with elemental materials pulled from air and soil, they build tree trunks, food crops, leaves, pollen, seeds, stems, and everything you've come to associate with living plants. Even algae use photosynthesis to grow and divide, which is why microalgae such as spirulina require sunlight to flourish. Photosynthesis is the foundation of most food webs on the planet. Any rational scientist would agree that if photosynthesis were halted, nearly all recognizable life on planet Earth would be exterminated. This is inarguable. Photosynthesis has three inputs. Sunlight, a source of light energy, carbon dioxide, an essential source of carbon used by plants to build almost everything that plants need, and water, used by plants to maintain structure, circulate metabolic nutrients, etc.
And we would point out that Mike Adams lives what he preaches. He has a large ranch in Texas, and I'm sure that the way he takes care of his animals, his cattle, whatever other animals he has, whatever plants and natural remedies that he grows, he sees right there the interaction of these three factors.
Why do these three inputs, sunlight, carbon dioxide, and water, matter so much? Because environmentalists have declared war on two out of the three, sunlight and carbon dioxide. Environmentalists are at war with photosynthesis and all plant life on planet Earth. It seems impossible, but environmentalists are at war with two out of the three primary inputs required to sustain photosynthesis. First, they're at war with carbon, and you often hear them talk about the, quote, war on carbon or carbon sequestration, unquote, a way to bury carbon in the ground so it is removed from atmospheric air. Environmentalists have even declared carbon dioxide to be a, quote, unquote, pollutant, even when it is the single most important molecule for supporting photosynthesis and nearly all plant life across the planet. Only a complete moron would declare war on the molecule of life that sustains trees, forests, plants, food crops, grasses, algae, and seaweed. Yet that's exactly what environmentalists have done. Their goal is the complete elimination of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere, an outcome that would exterminate all recognizable life on Earth, all in the name of being, quote-unquote, green, of course. Since virtue signaling is more important than actually supporting living organisms these days. Environmentalists seem to be utterly oblivious to the fact that all humans, plants, animals, and insects are carbon-based life forms. That's because nearly every molecule in your body contains carbon. You are made of carbon. Vitamin C is made of carbon. The anti-cancer nutrients in broccoli are made of carbon. Wait, you didn't know that? Astonishingly, very few people realize that vitamins, essential oils, fatty acids, natural medicines, and even pharmaceuticals are almost all made of carbon. To prove this to yourself, visit ChemSpider. This is the website, ChemSpider, all one word, .com. And search for any phytochemical you want. If you search for ascorbic acid, that is vitamin C, you get this vitamin C page. And Mike has it reproduced on his website here. This formula, and he gives the not merely the chemical formula, but a nice diagram that shows how it all fits together. That formula, of course, means that one molecule of vitamin C is made of 6 carbons, 8 hydrogens, and 6 oxygens. This can be mapped out in a 2D diagram, and Mike does that in his pages here on his website. If you're not a chemist, you might be wondering, so where's the carbon in that? Chemists laugh at the question because every intersection of black lines, and there are quite a few in this diagram, indicates a carbon atom. Carbon atoms are so common in organic chemistry that chemists don't even note them, because every diagram would be littered with symbols for carbon. As a molecular diagram shows, vitamin C is made of just 3 elements, carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen. Nothing else. Plants use the same 3 elements to build millions of different molecules, including medicinal nutrients and antibacterial phytochemicals. Did you notice that these same 3 elements are also found in photosynthesis? Carbon dioxide, CO2, provides the carbon. H2O, water, provides the hydrogen. Sunlight provides the energy. Vitamin C is synthesized by plants using carbon dioxide, hydrogen, and metabolic energy for synthesis. Any environmentalist who hates carbon dioxide must also hate vitamin C, herbal medicines, essential oils, nutrients, plant pigments, and omega-3 oils, because they're all made out of carbon. If you are at war with carbon, you are at war with life itself. And we have to interject that the planned population reduction, that's what this is all about. In many sinister Luciferian ways, including GMOs, vaccine harm, pharmaceutical fatal side effects, and the aluminum and barium poisoning of the land and water from chemtrails. Back to the article. Many people who are into saving the planet are also into healthy plant-based oils, such as omega-3s or DHA. What an interesting coincidence, since DHA, Elizabeth said this to help me pronounce this. This is a big one. Docosahexaenoic acid, I think that's pretty close, is also made out of just 3 elements. That's DHA. Care to guess what they are? Carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen. The chemical formula is C22H32O2. DHA is synthesized by various species of algae, and they use carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen to make DHA a powerful brain-boosting nutrient that boosts the neurological development of babies. Environmentalists must think DHA is bad since it's made out of carbon. In fact, millions of useful molecules are made of carbon. Many of them are synthesized by plants using nothing but carbon from carbon dioxide and hydrogen and oxygen. Environmentalists who are at war with carbon are at war with life. Just about every molecule you value and nearly every molecule you are made of is made out of carbon. If you're at war with carbon, you're at war with life on planet Earth. If you want to eliminate carbon dioxide, you are working to exterminate life. Yet probably 90% of college students today believe that carbon dioxide is a pollutant, and they would politically support any effort to eliminate it, even if doing so resulted in a global ecological collapse and the extinction of humanity. Astonishingly, environmentalists have been so deeply brainwashed and miseducated, deliberately miseducated, that they actually think carbon is bad. They must also hate themselves, since 96% of the human body is made of just 4 elements, oxygen, carbon, hydrogen, and nitrogen. Roughly 18% of your body is carbon by molecular weight. So if you hate carbon, you hate yourself. Maybe that's why environmentalists are so full of hatred and ignorance. They are made of the very elements they've declared war against. If you've ever wondered why leftists are so angry all the time, it's because they're made of the very element they hate, carbon. Hydrocarbons release fresh carbon into the atmosphere, where plants can use it to create valuable molecules that support life. Burning fossil fuels, by the way, means combusting hydrocarbons to release energy. One of the byproducts of burning fossil fuels is the release of CO2 into the atmosphere, providing fresh CO2 that plants are starving to harvest from the air. CO2 levels in the atmosphere right now are at near emergency low levels of barely above 400 parts per million. Forests, food crops, and indigenous plants across the globe would flourish at double or triple the the current level of CO2. If we had, for example, 1,200 parts per million of CO2 in the atmosphere, the Earth would be greener and more lush. Yet for some reason, environmentalists hate the thought of plants having more nutrients. They want the Earth to be, quote-unquote, green, they say, by eliminating CO2 from the atmosphere, taking away the single most important nutrient for photosynthesis and plant metabolism. The burning of fossil fuels releases nutrients into the air that plants need to survive. Instead of keeping all the carbon trapped in the ground, fossil fuel consumption actually frees carbon to be used by plants in support of a greener, more lush, more biodiverse ecosystem across the planet. When carbon is trapped in fossil fuels underground, that carbon is isolated from the plants that need it. When fossil fuels are burned, that carbon is finally released into the air so the plants can use it to synthesize the molecules we all use and enjoy, from vitamin C to anti-cancer compounds, such as sulforaphane found in broccoli. Yes, it's made of carbon. Its formula, C6H11NOS2. And Mike has another fine diagram showing that very structure of that compound, sulforaphane. That's a life-saving anti-cancer nutrient that's synthesized by cruciferous vegetables, which pull carbon dioxide out of the air in order to build sulforaphane molecules.
And anyone who doesn't know the term cruciferous vegetables, that would be vegetables like cabbage, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, and I believe kale is one of them. They have very, very helpful properties. Especially broccoli is good as an antifungal agent.
A war on carbon is a war on plants, nutrition, herbs, natural medicine, superfoods, and life itself. Only a complete moron, a raging lunatic, or a brainwashed idiot could be convinced to think that carbon is bad for the planet. Yet, that describes about 90% of the, quote, scientific establishment, unquote, now consisting of complete anti-science idiots who have forgotten how photosynthesis works and why it's the basis of ecology for the entire planet. If you really want to green the planet, keep consuming clean sources of hydrocarbons, such as natural gas, because they release trapped carbon into the atmosphere where plants can finally use it. Even burning gasoline in your automobile actually releases CO2 that plants can use. Far from destroying the world, fossil fuels are actually the very source of carbon that can help green the world.
Now, this important article by Mike Adams at naturalnews.com, you might want to alert others to it, because you can see that it is not just idiots and crazy men who are advocating this taking away the carbon. It is Luciferian-led men who have a reprobate mind. They can no longer see that murder is evil, that evil is evil. To them, evil is good. Mother Gaia. Viva la Mother Gaia, not Viva la France. It's so important that you hear everything that Mike says so that you can talk intelligently when people are brainwashed and say to you about the polar bears disappearing and the ice, all of this. Pick it up again, Lou.
Notably, if environmentalists ever succeed in eliminating carbon from the atmosphere, they will almost instantly exterminate all recognizable life on Earth. Is this their goal? Is the environmental movement some kind of suicide cult? Or, better yet, are they actually pushing an insidious agenda of terraforming planet Earth to make it uninhabitable by humans?
Remember what Alexa said somewhere? I see a lot of people dying. What is this? Is this an Illuminati oracle telling us?
Or are the environmentalists just stupid and suicidal? Personally, I wouldn't necessarily mind all the environmentalists going off to their own planet somewhere and exterminating themselves with their suicidal intentions. But the problem we have is that they are trying to murder the planet where the rest of us live. That cannot be allowed. The life-killing lunatics must be stopped. They are ecological murderers, botanical eugenicists. They want to destroy all plant life on Earth in the name of, quote, saving the planet, unquote. And they don't seem to mind the fact that human civilization cannot possibly survive their insane agendas rooted in either mass delusion or murderous intent. They're either trying to kill all life on the planet, in other words, or they're so incredibly stupid that they've been talked into supporting mass murder in the name of environmentalism. Either way, they are death cult lunatics. If we hope to survive their dangerous planet-killing schemes like carbon sequestration, a global dimming, we must rip these lunatics from power, take their hands off the controls, and put them all in straitjackets where they belong. Simply put, there is no future for the human race if the current breed of lunatic environmentalists are allowed to run their death cult programs that would shut down photosynthesis and exterminate all recognizable life on our planet. Thank God carbon dioxide is produced by every living mammal on the planet, including you, meaning that you can help save the planet by taking a jog and simply exhaling. In the spirit of that simple and inescapable truth, I propose a new bumper sticker. Waging war on carbon isn't the end of the lunacy of wacko environmentalists. They also think there's something wrong with sunlight, another key input for photosynthesis. They've launched a program of, quote, global dimming, unquote, that seeks to literally pollute the atmosphere by dispersing millions of tons of smog, sulfur dioxide, into the atmosphere, running 4,000 flights a year over the next 15 years, all in the name of geoengineering the atmosphere. These are the same lunatics who said chemtrails were a conspiracy theory. Now they've renamed it, quote, stratospheric aerosol injection, unquote, and claim it will save the world. In essence, they are terraforming the Earth and making it uninhabitable by humans. Are they completely insane, or are they prepping the planet for colonization by something that isn't human? And Mike says, coming soon, in his website, terraforming.news. See full coverage of that crucial issue at this story on Natural News called Terraforming Has Begun, Global Dimming is a Plot to Exterminate Humanity.
And, of course, all of this is connected to the mass population reduction ideals of the elite. And there's so much more than even what Mike mentions there in the chemtrails with the aluminum, the barium, the ethylene dibromide, the JP-8 jet fuel, all of these things playing a role in our lives while this lie is promoted. But, you know, the Washington Times, Dan Boylan, on December 4th, the headline was, Political Disconnect, Paris Riots Reveal Public's Unwillingness to Accept a Carbon Tax. And, of course, we said this is a tug of war. So the globalists haven't fully succeeded yet in removing the sun and the carbon completely from our world, as Mike Adams' powerful article suggests, that this is a danger. No, this tug of war is very encouraging in France. And the global climate deal, this article says, signed in Paris and rejected last year by Mr. Trump, is fatally flawed because it raises the price of energy for responsible countries while whitewashing some of the worst polluters, Mr. Trump tweeted. American taxpayers and American workers shouldn't pay to clean up other countries' pollution. Led by Paul Romer, who won the 2018 Nobel Economics Prize for his work on getting climate change, these top economists argue for it, but we have a lot of people against it. And one of those persons was House Majority Whip Steve Scalise. You remember him. They tried to kill him in the baseball practice. He and Representative David B. McKinley, West Virginia Republican, proposed a non-binding resolution to condemn all carbon taxes. It passed by a 229-180 vote. We have so much more important news to tell you about this tug of war. There will be a part two next week. Please do tune in and please tell your friends, and if there are any awake churches not asleep who care at all about standing in the gap, let them know about thedividedkingdom.org. We thank you for listening on LWRN.net and on WWCR. We just ask the Lord Jesus Christ to give you strength and hope and help you this Christmas the way he has helped us through you. Good night.